This is Kurt Anderson. I'm standing in a secret, sweltering underground factory in Queens, in New York City. I can't tell you exactly where, because this is a hive of illegal activity. All around me here, men and women, maybe 60 people, are hard at work manufacturing fake designer handbags and sunglasses, fake Gucci's and Louis Vuitton's. But what does it mean to call all these purses and glasses piled around me fake? I mean, to my untrained eye, they look just the same as the originals. The thing is, we're accustomed to believing that the things we hear and see are what they're purported to be, just as you've been accustomed to trust me. When in fact, I've been faking this whole secret designer handbag factory thing. I don't really know about any underground factory. This whole time, I've been sitting right here in our regular studio, and all those realistic on-location sounds you heard? More fakery. Radio forgery, you could say. From WNYC in New York, I'm Kurt Anderson, I swear, and today in Studio 360, we're spotting the fakes. We're going to start by looking at something that's been around for centuries, forged art. The crime is still so persistent and widespread that any newly unearthed big-time painting or sculpture is immediately greeted by the question, but is it real? One of the most notorious recent art forgeries happened in England in the 1990s when two men were arrested for spectacularly exploiting the vulnerabilities of the art market. Art dealer John Drew handled the paperwork and John Myatt handled the paintbrush, and they almost got away with it. For reasons that will become clear in a minute, it's hard to know the precise scale of their crime. Peter Crimmins tracked down Myatt at his home in Staffordshire, England.
In the 1980s, when the art market was booming, John Myatt was not. By 1986, his painting career had been on the slide for 10 years. His wife had left him with two babies to care for. He was going broke. And he was all but unknown except for a reggae song he co-wrote for Janet Kay called Silly Games, which topped the UK pop charts in 1979. Then John Myatt had a brainstorm. He could mimic famous modernist pictures and sell them at reasonable prices, which is all perfectly legal, as long as no one claims they are originals. That element, however, came soon enough in a man named John Drew, who hired Myatt to paint fakes at about $200 a pop.
I'd found a sketch called Portrait of an Army Doctor by a German cubist called Albert Glaze, and I turned that sketch into a painting. I signed it Albert Glaze. About 3 or 4 weeks later, he called up and he said, you know that cubist painting you did? I've taken it into Christie's. They've valued it at £25,000. Would you like £12,500 in cash in a brown envelope? You know, it was bye-bye charity shops and hello new shoes for the kids and hello new shoes for me and hello new clothes for me and hello new clothes for them. And wow, I could pay the rent and I didn't have to worry about it. You know, just to put a lot of money then, a lot of money.
In the end, Myatt painted about 200 pictures, and Drew sold them as original Monets, Dubuffets, Giacomettis, Brocs, Chagalls. Myatt admits he was doing a rather sloppy job of it, but the success of the fraud laid less on his canvases and more on the state of modern art itself. Much of modern art is supposed to look sloppy.
A lot of modern art, or contemporary art, should I put it? A lot of it is just advertising, isn't it? Just self-advertising, that's what's asked for nowadays.
Here's the third John of our story, Detective Sergeant Jonathan Searle, a former art historian and restorer who used his expertise in painting to investigate this forgery for Scotland Yard.
There's a big anti-art, anti-technique movement and has been for quite a while, so that sort of thing is much easier to forge.
When you get to people like Dubuffet, who actually deliberately try to paint like lunatics, from the forger's point of view, I mean, it's an absolute gift.
If that sounds cynical to you, then here's something more. Mr. Myatt and Mr. Drew understood, better than most, that you cannot sell any painting, sloppy or sublime, on the strength of the painting itself. To really deceive the buyer, it must be legally authenticated by its historic record, its provenances.
I think they were good because they weren't just concerned with duping the art world with the pictures themselves. They also went to the lengths of actually duping the art world with the provenances.
Sarah Jackson is the historic claims director of the Art Loss Register, an international database which tracks lost, stolen, and forged artwork.
I mean, I can think of sort of infamous forgers in history. There's a very famous one called Van Meegeren, for example, who took enormous care to actually create the work of art. But to go one step further, that, you know, in the way that John Drew did, was, I mean, it was unprecedented.
John Drew did more than forge a few documents. He fabricated past owners and wrote personal letters from fictionalized people discussing fake paintings. He broke into the archives of the Tate Modern in London and altered their library of catalogs by inserting phony pages with pictures of phony canvases and then reshelving the catalogs. His false provenances infected the art world's historic record in such a way that it cannot be fixed. The case is both appalling and fascinating, not only to Hollywood, which has optioned the story, but also to the police detectives, to the prosecutors, to the art market, and even to John Myatt himself.
I looked at it as a kind of strange, bizarre interlude in my life, which was bound to end in tears, you know, but while it was lasting, it was a bit of a laugh. Ha ha ha, ho ho ho. And, you know, it'll never happen, but of course it always does. They get you in the end.
In 1995, both Myatt and Drew were found and arrested. Myatt immediately confessed and helped police find as many of the fraudulent canvases as possible. But they couldn't find them all. There are still about 80 pieces out there somewhere in galleries, museums, and private collections. In an art market where a Van Gogh brought over $80 million, a Picasso fetched $100 million, we can imagine Myatt's fakes are being traded for plenty of money. And Myatt, on this point, is pleased. To him, this is a reactionary crime in an art market that's spun out of control.
The relationship between a painting or a sculpture and money has kind of become perverted. You know, although I didn't like crime, I didn't feel like I was a criminal doing this, because I just felt this is such a stupid situation that people are valuing paintings at, you know, I mean, such silly amounts of money that I can't see that I'm doing any harm, frankly.
You're as much to blame, 'cause I know you feel the same.
After his trial and 4-month prison term, John Myatt's reputation is in tatters. But since getting out, he's done pretty well for himself. He has a successful business painting fake art for commission. It's called Genuine Fakes, and it's legitimate. He's found one gallery in London that will exhibit his work. He lives with his new wife in a beautiful converted farmhouse in rural Staffordshire. He drives an Audi. And after our interview, he gave me a lift to the train station.
Right. I am confused about really how to present myself to the outside world. You know, what should be my strategy publicly about the morality here of what's happened? Because if there is something immoral going on in the art world, then I want to know that I have the right to say so, even though I'm a criminal, ex-criminal. And if anybody out there has got a kind of clear sense of what they'd say if they were in my shoes, would they please email me or phone me up or just let me know? Because it's a tricky one. I could just do with a little bit of help.
For Studio 360, this is Peter Crimmins.
If you have some advice for John Myatt, you can contact him through studio360.org. I'm Kurt Anderson in Studio 360, and we're talking today about fakes. With me to help expose the fakery is Thomas Hoving, one of the great international authorities on art fraud. He's worked inside the art world for 50 years now and was for a decade the director of the Metropolitan Museum of Art. He's the author of False Impressions, The Hunt for Big-Time Art Fakes, as well as more than a dozen other books about art history. Thomas Hoving, welcome to Studio 360.
Kurt, good to be here.
Now, where does the John Myatt story fit into the history and pantheon of art fraud for you?
Well, he's self-congratulatory and he's boosting himself way beyond reality. He's the second 15th-rate forger. His stuff was ludicrously stupid. I saw some of the stuff and couldn't believe that anybody would take it. It's like the stuff that people used to put on the top of lousy chocolate boxes. And the man is wrong when he says that this documentation seeding and planting hadn't been done before. This is old stuff. It goes back to the early 19th century.
How was he able to get so many dozens, scores, more than 100 of these works into the public art markets and not have people say, hey, that's bad.
Kurt, deal with the fact. Who proved that they're hundreds? Maybe they're teens. Maybe they're 27. The every forger that I've ever come across inflates the number of things that have fooled the Louvre, the Met, the every place, you know, and the wealthy, the collectors, the connoisseurs. It's part of the business. Art forgery is all about money. Well, at least he admits that. He wanted new shoes for himself and his kids, which is good. You know, he should have shoes for his kids. But number two, the art world is monumentally stupid. And this goes for professional curators. This goes for dealers. This goes for auction people, so-called art experts. They don't look. They don't bother to look anymore. They have a quick – they see it's the style of Monet's good enough for them. And if they back it up with something in the Tate Modern Archives that says this is 25 by 17 centimeters, by gosh, it's got to be. They're very gullible and they're very stupid and they're very lazy.
And I suppose at a certain point, it's in lots of people's interest to certify that something is authentic.
Or put it this way, Kurt, the art market, the art world, is the largest unregulated business in the world, all based upon let the buyer beware.
Thomas Hoving is my guest today, and he and I will be back in a minute. Coming up, Winston Churchill gave famously rousing speeches that were broadcast to the whole world on the radio.
The enemy attacked us on all sides with great strength and fierceness.
But was that really him? That's ahead in Studio 360 from PRI, Public Radio International. Stay with us.